Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Excuse me. Last call for the final event in our First Principles debate series. It is tonight, and it is free. The question this time is capitalism moral, co-sponsored by Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute. Our debaters this time will be banker and Ayn Rand disciple John Allison versus Washington Post columnist and MSNBC contributor Ezra Klein. You know Ezra Klein, you maybe see him on MSNBC. Admission is free, but we ask that you RSVP at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. While you're there, suggest a movie clip about capitalism and watch the ones already posted. There are some interesting movie clip juxtapositions there. And take our survey about the pros and cons of capitalism. That's our final First Principles debate. Is capitalism moral? For free tonight at 6 at the Skirball Center at NYU. Reserve tickets on our politics website, or you can try to just show up. I think there'll be some seats still available, but I can't guarantee it. Join the pregame going on now at itsafreecountry.org. Now, we will talk next about what bin Laden's death might mean for al-Qaeda and the war on terror generally. Here's another 40 seconds of the president's speech last night.
The cause of securing our country is not complete, but tonight we are once again reminded that America can do whatever we set our mind to. That is the story of our history. Whether it's the pursuit of prosperity for our people or the struggle for equality for all our citizens, our commitment to stand up for our values abroad, and our sacrifices to make the world a safer place. Let us remember that we can do these things not just because of wealth or power, but because of who we are. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
From sea to shining sea, President Obama last night. I'm joined now by Lawrence Wright, who has written about Osama bin Laden for The New Yorker magazine, where he's a staff writer, and in his Pulitzer Prize-winning 2006 book, The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, and his play, My Trip to Al-Qaeda. Hi, Lawrence Wright. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello, Brian. It's good to hear your voice again.
And same here. In 2008, you wrote this: most terror organizations disappear with the death of their charismatic leader, and it would be hard to imagine al-Qaeda remaining a coherent entity without Osama bin Laden. Do you still think that's the case?
I think they're in a crisis now, and that it's going to be very difficult to find a successor to bin Laden who can actually handle that organization and lead it into the future. There's no obvious, there's no charismatic successor. There's no Ayman al-Zawahiri, the guy that is going to be running it now, is anti-charismatic. He's got, no history of his own organization, al-Jihad in Egypt. He ran into the ground, and I suspect he'll have about the same kind of luck with al-Qaeda.
What is al-Qaeda today, though? Are all the groups that use al-Qaeda in their names linked? If it's so decentralized, why do they need a charismatic leader, or do they need one? For example, most people are blaming al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb for last week's bombing in Marrakesh, although they haven't officially taken credit. We know about al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, based in Yemen, which had relationships to the Times Square bombing attempt and Fort Hood. So how much do they need a charismatic leader?
You know, that a lot of these affiliates are essentially nationalist groups that have run up this, like, pirate flag of al-Qaeda and say, well, this is our banner that we're flying now. The main person who was espousing this internationalist jihad was bin Laden. It was his cause. And, because he became such a celebrity and initially he had money to fund it, other groups would associate with him. I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of centrifugal force as these groups begin to realize that their allegiance to al-Qaeda hasn't gotten them anywhere. There's no central leader at this point and no obvious appealing successor. So I think that what we'll see is a degeneration of the internationalist jihad more back into what it naturally is, a group of nationalists. Causes that really don't have that much in common.
Listeners, we're talking with journalist Lawrence Wright about the impact of the death of Osama bin Laden on terrorism, this kind of terrorism, and the war on terror generally, and we can take your comments and questions on that at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or of course continue to post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or tweet at Brian Lehrer, or post on our Brian Lehrer Show Facebook page. Do you think that a 1-2 punch has been dealt to al-Qaeda this year? This, obviously, the second one, and the democracy movements throughout the Arab world that have been making al-Qaeda irrelevant because they're just not about them?
I do think that that's true, although I also believe that in some places where the Arab revolt is underway, there's not a clear civil society ready to take control, and that there'll be a high likelihood of a lot of chaos and anarchy inside places like Libya and Yemen, which aren't really in the same developed state as Tunisia and Egypt are, and that terrorist groups and al-Qaeda will take advantage of that.
Everybody's been commenting on the fact that he was found in Pakistan and not in the border area, but in the middle of the country in what you call a retirement community for ex-military officers. What does the U.S. do now with the so-called ally, Pakistan, in the war on terror?
I think there's a reckoning ahead of us. The Pakistanis have a lot of explaining to do. My feeling about it, I've been saying for several years now that we should completely reassess our relationship with Pakistan. We've given them more than $11 billion in military aid since 9/11. That put the military and the intelligence community in Pakistan in the business of looking for bin Laden. He became a priceless asset for them, and if they found him, they would be out of business. So it's not surprising that it wouldn't be surprising if they were protecting him because he was so valuable. In practically the only source of revenue. This is a country of 186 million people, and fewer than 2 million of them pay taxes. A lot of American tax dollars went into that country. And I think that it's had many unintended consequences.
Are you concerned about the immediate aftermath of the killing? Is there a heightened risk of terrorist attacks now, and where would it come from?
Yes, I am. I think that's a likely possibility. Just last week, there were the bombings in Marrakesh and the arrest in Germany. They may not have been al-Qaeda central operations, but they were al-Qaeda related. And so we don't know how many other entrepreneurial efforts are underway or have been in the pipeline in the past. We don't know, for instance, if there was an operation in al-Qaeda's portfolio that was supposed to be triggered by bin Laden's death. That could be. I mean, the signal of his death could start something. If it would be perfectly in the genre that al-Qaeda works from, that they might have something waiting for this opportunity.
We're talking about what bin Laden's death might mean for al-Qaeda and the war on terror generally with journalist Lawrence Wright, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Marianne in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello. Marianne.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, go ahead, Marianne.
I'm just wondering if this won't be used as a recruiting tool when you kill a major leader like a Kennedy or a Martin Luther King. It's always used. There's so much energy behind the movement that it's used as a way to galvanize people and to get them involved. What does your speaker think?
Marianne, thank you. And Lawrence, to that point, we're now hearing a denunciation of the killing of bin Laden from Hamas. Ismail Haniyeh, the prime minister of the Hamas government in the Gaza Strip, issued this denunciation, quote, "We condemn the assassination and the killing of an Arab holy warrior. We regard this as a continuation of the American policy based on oppression and the shedding of Muslim and Arab blood. So I think we learned something about Hamas.
We sure did.
From that.
I want to talk about that Hamas thing for a moment. It's fascinating to me because I was in Gaza in 2009, and bin Laden had condemned Hamas for participating in elections and saying that they were, no longer true Muslims. And Hamas had a problem with al-Qaeda affiliates, more radical groups than Hamas that had begun to take root inside the Gaza Strip. So I was a little surprised by Haniyeh's response to this death of bin Laden. It would seem that it would, in some respects, come as a relief. Now, I agree with your caller that al-Qaeda will try to use the death of bin Laden as a recruiting tool, and no doubt he will be seen as a martyr. But they face, at the same time, a staggering succession problem. There are really only three candidates. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the doctor that has always been bin Laden's chief lieutenant, he had his own terror organization in Egypt, al-Jihad, which he ran into the ground. And he's a very divisive, uncharismatic, almost anti-charismatic figure. But on the other hand, al-Jihad forms the core from the beginning of al-Qaeda till now of the inner circle of al-Qaeda. And but he doesn't have near the mystique that bin Laden has. I'm hesitant to use the word charisma with bin Laden because he wasn't really charismatic. He was more of a puzzling, quiet figure whose remoteness and the oddity of the fact that he was a wealthy Saudi who engaged in jihad, all of that added to his mystique, but he was not exactly a charismatic speaker. Still, he was able to, through his example, inspire many young radical Muslims around the globe.
And so we heard an analyst on the Takeaway this morning saying bin Laden had already become a figure like Che Guevara. Young radical Muslims didn't really know the specifics of what he'd done, but they admired his anti-American stance. So that's similar to what you were just saying. But on the succession, you mentioned Zawahiri. Also on your blog post on the New Yorker site, you mentioned Anwar al-Awlaki, who is the leader of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in Yemen, correct?
Yes, and I think that he's a more potent threat in many ways than Zawahiri.
And an American citizen, if I'm not mistaken, isn't he?
Yes, he was born in New Mexico, educated in the United States. He's a Yemeni American. What's striking about him is that in January 2000, the first wave of al-Qaeda, the 9/11 hijackers, arrived in America. And they went to San Diego, where Anwar al-Awlaki was the imam in the local mosque. And then when he moved across the country to Virginia, they followed him. And he became the chaplain at George Washington University and a cleric and a imam in a mosque there. And the FBI questioned him. But, I mean, this is al-Qaeda in 2000 was associating with Anwar al-Awlaki. And he's inspired a number of the recent attacks in the United States. So in terms of actual potent danger, he is a very dangerous guy, but he's not bin Laden. He didn't fight in the jihad against the Soviets. He doesn't have that kind of standing, but I think that he will be a figure mm-hmm. to contend with.
So
the only other figure is Abu Yahya al-Libi, who would be a contender against the Wahri for control of al-Qaeda Central.
Let's see if we can get a few more questions in for you before we run out of time. Journalist Lawrence Wright talking about the implications of bin Laden's death for al-Qaeda and the larger war on terror, or their war on Americans. Laura on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I was wondering how much credit can be given to President Obama that Osama bin Laden was killed under his watch, or was it more just coincidence or timing?
Laura, thank you. And certainly this political debate has started already. Some of the Republican presidential hopefuls, rather than crediting Obama for doing this, are crediting the U.S. military and kind of making that distinction. Lawrence, do you have an opinion?
Yeah, you know what this makes me remember? In 1998, when the campaign, the al-Qaeda campaign against the United States began with the bombings in East Africa of the American embassies, the question of how do we respond arose. And President Clinton at the time pulls aside the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Hugh Shelton, and says, you know what we ought to do? We ought to send a bunch of special ops guys, you know, ninjas in, and, you know, just drop them in his camp compound and wipe them out. And Shelton turned pale. And, you know, the idea that, you know, the military would take such a big risk was out of the question. So what did we do? We sent cruise missiles into Khartoum, where we thought we were attacking an al-Qaeda factory making weapons of mass destruction. It turned out to be a factory that was manufacturing veterinary medicines, and we killed the caretaker there. And then we sent a bunch of other cruise missiles into an empty al-Qaeda camp in Afghanistan, and that was our response.
And then 100,000 deaths later, if you count Iraqi civilians, we send the ninjas in to
we
get them
the
anyway.
We send the ninjas in, yeah. And so I think that the answer to the caller's questions is that it took a lot of nerve to decide to do this face-to-face with no certainty that American troops wouldn't be killed in the operation, or the operation might turn into something like the hostage rescue catastrophe in Carter's era. This was a well-planned, well-executed operation, but any such operation faces a lot more danger than just sending cruise missiles mm-hmm. out of the Arabian Sea.
Cut.
I think that the fact that they could ensure that this was done and the action was completed is the most significant takeaway.
Carly and Hawthorne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carly.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I just had a quick question. When I heard about Osama's death, I was scared. I was so scared, and I think that I saw everybody rejoicing and, you know, partying around Ground Zero, and it's like, I think we should be scared. I mean, don't you think we opened up like a whole new can of worms here, that his death influencing, that we're going to see more terrorist attacks in the United States?
Carly, it's a great question, and, you know, a lot of people are tempering their joy over the death of Osama bin Laden with this round of new fear, just as Carly expressed it, Lawrence. So what do you think? And do you think that the tone we take matters? The president avoided sounding too triumphal in his speech last night. But then, of course, lots of individuals went out outside the White House and to the World Trade Center site and were whooping it up, USA, USA.
It does make a difference. I mean, think how wounded Americans felt by the jubilation of Muslims and some Muslims to 9/11. Those kinds of images.
Though we had a caller earlier who said, hey, don't bring that up because that's not a moral equivalent, jubilation over the attack against innocent civilians versus the attack on this leader, Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, I accept the distinction, but you know, it depends. I think that a good sober moral tone is the appropriate one. And to reflect on, you know, how much loss everybody's endured in the decade of bin Laden is an appropriate one. The sense of relief is appropriate. And also the feeling that maybe the page really can turn. The coincidence of the timing with the Arab Spring is so striking, because I don't think that the page could fully be turned until bin Laden was gone.
Rick in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rick.
Hi, and thank you so much for your show, Brian. I think it's really an important contribution to our to the public political awareness.
Thank you.
So I was wondering, Mr. Wright, if you could please speak about the role of the U.S. in financially supporting bin Laden in the 1980s to get Russia out of Afghanistan. My sense is that there's a continuing failed policy of using violence to solve geopolitical problems because of the inevitable, horrendous, unexpected consequences with Osama bin Laden. It's his legacy of al-Qaeda and terrorism. We supported Saddam Hussein. We supported Hosni Mubarak, and, you know, on and on.
Rick, and thank you. And James, you know, I mean, Lawrence, in addition to whatever judgments we make about U.S. foreign policy over a 30-year period, this is the end of a 30-year relationship with Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Right? The beginning of the relationship was propping him up along with other Mujahideen that was fighting the Soviets when they had invaded Afghanistan.
Well, let me distinguish this. We didn't really support bin Laden during the jihad. What we did, we gave money and the Saudis matched us dollar for dollar. The money that was given went through the hands of the ISI, and it went through to seven different Afghan groups, not to the Arab Mujahideen. They raised their money privately. Bin Laden was able to go back to the kingdom, and it could have been that he got some Saudi government money as well. But it's a myth that America was supporting bin Laden during that time, although we were nominal allies in the campaign against the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan. However, let me say I completely agree with the sentiments about the funding of dictators, and also the funding of violent responses to repression. Look at where the Arab Spring has succeeded. It has succeeded in places where nonviolence has taken control. That has created a model for a future that can actually succeed.
We have 60 seconds left.
Yeah.
From our comments page, tying right into this point, Nick asks, what is the mission of U.S. forces in Afghanistan now that Osama bin Laden has been killed? And we have 45 seconds.
Well, I think that one can think that we're going to diminish our role in Afghanistan. The Taliban is not naturally our enemy. The Times Square attempted bomber was sent by the Taliban. That's the first time that has happened. But essentially, the Taliban is a nationalist group with nationalist aims, and its affiliation with al-Qaeda will be diminished if al-Qaeda itself is reduced or eliminated.
Lawrence Wright, who has written about Osama bin Laden for The New Yorker magazine, and in his 2006 book, The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, and his play, My Trip to Al-Qaeda. Thank you so much for joining us on this historic day.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And, of course, stay with WNYC all day for special coverage of the death of Osama bin Laden. I will see some of you tonight in our first principles debate at the Skirball Center at NYU at 6 o'clock. The rest of you, hopefully, back here on the radio tomorrow morning. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.